S-A-N-T-A. Rearrange the letters, and what do you get? Zombie Takeout.
Welcome to episode 266 of Zombie Takeout. The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listener submitted again. This is from John Phillips on our Facebook page in reference to last week's episode, our review of Rare Exports. Keep forgetting the name.
He said, a weird name for the movie.
Yeah, and it was the first time I'd seen it, so it wasn't something I was familiar with.
Not sure if the Finns are up on this marketing thing.
He said, wrong Swayze film. The one you were thinking about is Next of Kin. And then you had to, you know, admonish him for
it's funny commenting. That I caught the comment. Like, I mean, he probably would have deleted it if I hadn't caught it.
Yeah. It's a good thing you caught it. Because like you said, we could use the comments.
Yeah, sure. Of course. We need comments. You know, yeah. We just hit 80 likes.
And
speaking of Facebook.
Oh, yes. On the comment about MST3K. Yeah, that I think netted us like 3 or 4 more likes.
Like over 1,000 people saw that.
Yeah, that's kind of insane. We should post about popular things more often.
I think more people saw that than they actually did on the AV Club site itself.
Wow.
Or the page. I mean, because obviously to see the article, you had to go to the AV Club.
Right. Yeah.
But the AV Club Facebook page, I don't remember even seeing that article. Or if I did, it was on very briefly.
Yeah, I saw it in my stream because I follow them on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, immediately put it up on our page because we'd been talking about it, of course, ad nauseum. Only one more time will we be talking about it because it's over, but we'll get to that.
Right.
John also went on to say, Patton Oswalt also had / has a recurring role on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., though I haven't watched this season yet. But UJ's comment is still correct. I'm guessing my comment about him not really being, you know, a bankable name, at least not in a lead role.
Oh, contraire, because what happened?
Well, again, we'll get to that in the news.
okay.
And there's more to it than just Patton. I mean, I'm sure he was part of it.
I think he was a big part of it, honestly. Mm. I mean, these are internet people that are going to Kickstarters, that are looking for Mystery Science Theater.
And one more comment, he said, it's amazing somehow my comment is able to go back in time and reach you, Scott, while you were recording.
You the magic of IMDb.
Because you were concerned that I would have deleted your comment, but
I thought it was hilarious, actually.
If I had deleted your comment, it would have made me look bad, too, because you said Roadhouse, and I just accepted it, because it's been like 25 years since I've seen Roadhouse.
I mean, honestly, though, they are very easily interchangeable.
I've actually never seen Next of Kin.
I mean, they are from almost the same time period.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen both, and you know, they're Swayze movies. Oh, yeah, pretty neat to know.
Actually, I think Roadhouse may be the only Swayze movie I've seen.
Really?
Dirty Dancing is another 80s one that everybody has seen except me.
It's kind of weird that I've wound up seeing a lot of his movies. I don't even know why, tell you the truth. But like, not like I sought them out. Mm. It was just okay. I don't think I've seen them in the theater.
Uh-huh.
Was that 3,000 Miles to Graceland a Swayze movie?
I have no idea. That's another one I've never seen that you've talked a lot about that I'm dreading, because all I know is Costner and I think Courtney Cox is in it.
Yeah,
it's not a movie I'm looking
Kurt
forward
Russell,
to. Yeah.
Not good Kurt Russell either.
Oh, that's a very short list.
Yeah, that's true.
And it usually involves John Carpenter.
Yes.
Anyway, more listener submitted. Matt Goranson on the same post commented, after listening, I had to watch it. What a weird ending.
Yes, that's a very, very weird. It's one of the weirdest endings we've probably had.
Mm-hmm. Based on that the description. Yeah. Based on the description, I was sort of expecting more Santa's Sleigh, a holiday favorite of mine, and less John Carpenter's The Thing. Not disappointed, though. And then I mentioned that, you know, I was also kind of expecting a horror film, which is why I maybe rated it a little lower than I would have if I, you know, knew what it was going in. Then I said, you know, maybe we could do Santa's Sleigh and Krampus next year and forget Ernest Saves Santa, which we had talked about.
We really do. We have years of Christmas movies left. Yeah. Even if we do two.
We've still never done the sequel to Silent Night, Deadly Night.
No.
And then he said you could
find that.
Oh, yeah, I have it bookmarked on Facebook or on YouTube. He then said you could throw in Ginger Dead Man and make it a trilogy, or better yet, not watch that awful movie. And I'm sure it's bad, but just based on the title Ginger Dead Man.
For that title alone, I say we do it.
Yeah. And finally, last listener submitted, Roberto Suarez on the Rare Exports trailer said, so glad you enjoyed it, because he's the one who recommended it to us. Thanks again, Roberto.
I forget.
Yeah, we were talking about doing Krampus and this week's movie, and he suggested Rare Exports as a trilogy.
Wow.
And we just threw out Krampus because it just opened this month, and it would have been difficult to get copies of it.
Yeah, or it would require Gasp going to see a movie.
Well, yeah. I'm trying to put that off on the new Star Wars movie. I'm hoping for... Well, I was looking for leaked copies, I'll just admit that. And I'm still kind of holding out hope for a same-day digital, you know, online release.
Nah, I'm probably going to go out to the burbs, go to hit the IMAX. Mm-hmm. It's fun to do that every now and again. Mm-hmm. And how often is there a movie you really feel
yeah,
doing?
Yeah. Judging from some reviews I've heard, it's good, but it's... They said it ranks just under Jedi.
I've heard mixed, so, and that's exactly what I want to hear, because I don't want to hear anything of it.
Well, yeah, yeah. I haven't heard any spoilers. I have actually met, and I don't go out of my way to avoid them. I've just haven't had them yet. People have been very good about that.
Especially criticism of Star Wars movies, I don't trust it. There's just such a herd mentality with it.
Fair enough.
That it's just all, I just don't want to hear any of it. Yeah. I want to go and judge it for myself.
All right, so on to some news. We have some bad news and some good news, starting with the bad. Actor Nicholas Smith, best known as Mr. Rumbold on Are You Being Served, a favorite of ours.
He's now free for the moment.
Yes, yes. He passed away last week at the age of 81. He was the last surviving cast member.
Which I did not know. Well, first off, I did not know he was still alive.
Yeah.
And I did not know the rest of the cast was dead. I knew a few of them were.
Despite appearances, he was actually one of the younger cast members. The woman who played Mrs. Brahms, Miss Brahms, Wendy Richardson, I think her name was, she was the youngest, of course.
Yeah.
And then it was Nicholas Smith and Trevor Bannister who played, Mr. Lucas. They were the same age. Nicholas Smith just happened to look a lot older.
Right.
So we've decided before the show that we're going to crowbar in the Are You Being Served movie. Yes, there's a movie. After Frankenhooker, just as a tribute. If you've never seen Are You Being Served, go to YouTube, search for it. I think I've found the entire series on there on a playlist at one point.
It's I'm sure BBC America plays it, right?
If they do, yeah, possibly, if it's on there. Either way, it's an episodic sitcom about a department store. You can jump in anywhere. You don't really need to, you know, see the story from a certain point. It's all standalone.
Yeah, I wonder if Kevin Smith ever... watched that and got the idea for Clerks.
Oh, that's a good idea. I never thought about that.
Because it does have a very Clerks
yes,
feel to it.
Yes, it is effectively Clerks before Clerks.
Right. It's a very, you know, British, you know, attitude to it, where the people who are, you know, in charge have more of a, you know, militaristic attitude, of course, to the job. And then, of course, you just have people just saying, fuck this, I'm here to get a paycheck and go home. Which for that time that they did this in the 60s was kind of a shocking, you know,
70s. It was actually started in 72, the same year I was born, but still, yeah, same idea, same principle.
Yeah.
And Mr. Lucas was basically Randall.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Oh, definitely.
Anyway, on to the good news. Of course, the final update in our ongoing coverage of the MST3K Kickstarter.
Ye of little faith.
yes. Unfortunately for me, they made me look bad. I was saying all along, you know, they might make it the next goal, but they're not going to make it any further. Not only did they make it to 5.5 million and we're getting all 12 episodes, when they made 5.5 million, and this was in combination, this was the Kickstarter and an add-on shop that they had selling, you know, various merchandise. So it's all going toward the end goal. They made it to 5.5 between the two of them. And Jen told me about this. I wasn't watching the telethon at this point. Joel said if they can make 5.9, he'll do a holiday special. I was watching when they got to 5.9, and more particularly when they told Joel that they'd made 5.9. His jaw hit the ground. It was great. And then he said if they make it to 6.3, they'll do a 14th episode. The last minute of the telethon. Did you watch it at all?
Nah, I didn't.
Last minute of the telethon, it was hosted by Paul and Storm, who are a geek music comedy act. You were right. It was all, you know, geek celebrities.
Yeah.
Literally the last minute, Paul and Storm, Joel, Felicia, Patton, basically everyone who was just kind of hanging around at that point, all, you know, on camera singing the theme song to close out the telethon. I think it was like 20-something seconds left. It was at 6.2. I know I was thinking, you know, if only they could have made it just that little bit more to get that 14th episode. Suddenly it rolls over from 6.2 to 6.3. Someone dropped like $100,000 in one donation.
Wow.
There are rumors that it was Jerry Seinfeld. I couldn't find any confirmation.
It very well could have been. I mean, he was, like I said this last week. I mean, these guys have a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. And
a lot of money into it.
And Seinfeld is one of the cameos.
Right. Mark Hamill, yeah. Also.
Apparently, I mean, from what I understand, he and Joel are friends, so he's agreed to do a cameo. And so, yeah, he decided to just, you know, drop it. And just kind of, I guess, just what I would have done if it had been like a $50 difference. I would have just pushed him to the goal with, you know, a last-minute donation. I've done that with a few Kickstarters. He did it with a little more because he has the resources. All right, so...
Just call me Nerdstradamus.
One more thing this week before we get to the inevitable. And that is, of course, because it is the last episode of the year, our top five best and worst of the year lists. Starting with our top five. You go first.
Oh, you'd like me to go first? You know, yeah. We should rehearse one of these.
Yeah, we
days.
Should discuss that. Well, oh, well.
All right, number five.
Takes away from the charm if we rehearse.
That's true, that's true. Number five, for the best of the year... I am going with Sharknado 3. Oh, hell no. Mm-hmm. You want me just run through all five? And then number four, I'm going with Sharknado 2, the second one, episode 247. Mm-hmm. The reason why I picked 2 over 3, 2 had this wonderful airplane parody that, man, you just gotta love. It was just so beautiful. Number three, episode 234's Mother's Milk. I don't think there's a single performance this year that we've seen like that, and it's just goddamn. Number two, I'm going with the episode right after, 235, Donnie Darko. Mm-hmm. Sparkle power.
Sparkle motion.
Funny. Sparkle motion, that's right. The weird... funny, just mm-hmm. I mean, so much shit going on, and so much to take in, and then and some really well choreographed scenes too. And then of course number one, the movie I've probably been quoting for most of the year, most of my top five helped within six episodes because this is 240, mm-hmm. Cabin in the Woods, mm-hmm. Between the Merman gag and just yelling at the fucking Japanese girls and just all of the little hidden monsters in there. Mm-hmm. I'd watch all five of these again right now if we weren't doing a show.
Right. Surprisingly little crossover, aside from the obvious. My number five, the obligatory one that's on my top five and probably going to be on your bottom five, Resident Evil Extinction, my favorite of the series. There always has to be one that I loved and you hated.
Why would that be in your top five?
You know, I love the series and that's my favorite of the series. Mostly, I think a lot of it is the crow scene with the, you know, the psychic flame and all of that. It's just so ridiculously insane.
Well, I'll have you know, that did not make my bottom five.
Oh, okay.
We had so much worse than you.
That's a surprise because you absolutely hated Extinction.
I did.
That was the one you hated more than all the others.
But to quote Qui-Gon Jinn, there's always a bigger fish.
All right, on to number four, Doctor Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Self-explanatory. It's Doctor Strangelove.
Just missed mine.
Now, on to my top three. Now, these could have been in any order. I really liked them all equally. I just have particular reasons for the order. At number three, I have Sharknado 2.
Okay, at crossover.
Mm-hmm. At number two, I have Sharknado 3. I put 3 ahead of 2 just because of the ending.
Yes.
It was just so over the top and insane. And my number one of the year, Time of Eve. One of my favorite anime. Well, I think one of the best anime I've ever seen. And I just gave it the edge over Sharknado because it actually had a message. Whereas, you know, the Sharknado movies are just dumb fun.
So for my bottom five, like I said, Resident Evil and I, Frankenstein just missed the list.
Honorable mentions.
They are honorable mentions. And as, you know, Dr. Strangelove should get an honorable mention for my top. The fifth, I would say, is The Notebook. There were some great performances in it, but if the CIA is banning torture, so no one should have to watch that movie. However, there are worse movies that we've seen this year. The other one would be The Serpent and the Rainbow. What happens when you give Bill Pullman a nice vehicle? He drives it into the ground. Number three, I've got Left Behind. Is there an explanation necessary?
Not really.
Nicolas Cage,
I suspect our top three might be very similar.
Number two, the basketball scene alone, Catwoman. So it's funny, I had two of my top five, 234, 235, and then I have 252 and 253.
Well, it was a shit trilogy.
My bottom five, yes. And of course, the crowning worst movie that we have seen. I'll have to go back and see if there's anything that even compares to this. It could make it the worst of all time.
I think so. If you're going right,
Saving Christmas. You are.
Yeah.
This week's movie. This week's episode 266.
And my bottom three. Well, first off, my honorable mention is The Notebook. I had to go by my ratings, and I gave it more than I gave number five. So I was really torn as to whether or not to make an exception, but I decided to stick with my ratings. On to number five, Ghoulies. Nothing more needs to be said there. It's Ghoulies.
It was just disappointing.
Yeah.
It could have had so much more potential to it. And yet it was just,
Right. Cool. On to number four, Old Boy, the remake, the Spike Lee version.
Yeah, that was pretty close to making mine.
The ending, it was what killed it for me. It would have been a solid three before then. And then, of course, my top three, exactly the same as yours.
In the same order?
Yes, surprisingly. Left Behind, Catwoman, and Saving Christmas, which of course brings us to this week's movie, because I mean, you've said it. We've said enough about Left Behind and Catwoman, and we're about to say a lot about this one. This week's movie, which is from 2014, Saving Christmas. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by God, just as fictional as almost all the other sponsors we've had on this show.
Also brought to you by cultural appropriation, because sometimes you just want to drink your hot chocolate. All right, this should be a really quick plot summary because, well, there really isn't one. We have a Christmas party going on. The man's brother, our protagonist's brother-in-law, is...
Is he really a protagonist? That implies action.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Actually, I've skipped a vital scene of the movie. First, we have Kirk Cameron begins the film by lecturing us about what's going on with Christmas and how they're just, you know, it's kind of, there are people that just don't want you to celebrate and stuff, which...
It's like a 10-minute monologue, straight to camera.
Yeah. So anyway, his brother-in-law has decided that, well, Christmas has become an over-commercialized, materialistic, grubby exercise of bullshit. And he just doesn't feel it. And apparently that's a sin.
Yeah.
And he just wants to have some peace and quiet. And of course, this is just all wrong, man. And yes. So Kirk goes out to tell him that he's all wrong and express the genius of his own biblical interpretation to change, retcon the symbols that were appropriated from the pagan cultures that they've incorporated into the celebration of Christmas and give them some Christian meanings. Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, sees the light. The guy's name, by the way, is Christian White.
Yeah. Played by the director of the film, by the way.
Yeah, and writer.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was a surprise. I thought this was Kirk Cameron's...
Apparently not. That is surprising.
He's like the guy that directed the Blink 182 thing, too.
Well, he did that, and he's got a movie coming up called Stonewall. If it's about Stonewall Jackson, that's fine. If it's about the Stonewall Inn, I'm very concerned.
That's funny. So yes, he sees the light and hilarity ensues.
Yeah, it should be mentioned that Kirk Cameron runs a ministry called Way of the Master with Ray Comfort, the anti-evolution apologetics genius who came up with the idea that the banana is perfectly formed for the hand and thus proof of intelligent design.
Way of the Master, is that like a kung fu movie?
It sounds like it.
But anyway, here's the thing, though, to start this off. This, of course, was not intended for us.
Absolutely not, no.
The one thing I was relieved about was that they didn't do a whole War on Christmas thing, despite he was kind of making some implications.
He talked about it in the beginning. They didn't really play on it too much. But
and then they kind of winked and laughed at it and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, chalked it up to a bunch of other conspiracy theories.
They gave him a whole monologue about it to a guy who turned out to be a conspiracy nut.
Yeah. So that was a relief.
Mm-hmm.
So what this entire movie really is, and it's not even really a movie if you look at it, but it is, and more on that later,
mm-hmm.
but it's a message to Christians that don't let anybody tell you that these things aren't Christian, that all these pagan symbols that we've been using all this time
mm-hmm.
Are Christian, and just enjoy them because we've appropriated them and yeah. They're ours now.
Uh-huh. And there's a whole thing about, you know, our holiday, our gifts, our whatever at the
yes.
end. The whole list of our this, our that.
You're celebrating the birth of the dude who overturned the money changing table in
yeah.
the temple, motherfucker.
And I just... Can we get more tribal than our this, our that, you know, our holiday, our gifts, our, you know, whatever. But just rolling it back to the intolerable opening monologue, he lists all of these things that he loves about Christmas, including cookies, fudge, a fireplace, and growing his beard. How are these things about Christmas?
Right, exactly. None of these things are specifically Christian beliefs.
No. He also says something about hot chocolate being, you know, indicative of the season, and you know, it's a Christian thing, almost effectively saying it's a Christian thing.
Right.
It was invented by the Aztecs. I specifically researched this. I knew it was the Aztecs or the Incans. It was the Aztecs.
Of course, chocolate's a New World thing.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't grow anywhere other than, like, South America, you know, naturally anyway.
Which made the whole banana thing that much more ridiculous because it's the perfect food. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put it on the exact opposite end of the planet as my chosen people.
Yeah, and guard it with enormous spiders.
Well, those spiders look fucking funny. I gotta tell you.
Off air, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I had him look up banana spider, and apparently their faces look a bit, well, not phallic, but whatever the other side of phallic is.
Vaginic?
Possibly.
I don't know.
So we get through that intolerable monologue when we're faced with this opening title sequence that really reminded me of a cheesy 80s sex comedy. this like punk version of some Christmas Carol and this cheesy animation.
He had a lot of music in this.
Mm.
He needed a lot of music.
And then he has a scene early on in the film, like first thing out of the credits, with his sister, his actual sister, who clearly is not an actor.
Right. There were a lot of non-actors in this.
Because she makes Cameron look like a decent actor. And if you've ever seen Growing Pains, let's say he peaked there.
Yes. Yeah, he actually did. That was the height of his acting career.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the first lesson, of course, is if you need to sit down with your audience and explain your movie to them before the movie starts,
mm-hmm.
you are a shitty filmmaker or storyteller and have no business making a movie.
Mm-hmm.
The second lesson is, if you've already sat down and talked your ears off for the first 5 to 10 minutes of it, you don't need to begin the scene introducing your character with, "That's me."
Yeah.
Which he does.
And he's playing himself.
Which means, of course, they clearly added that monologue at the beginning or lecture. Well, actually, who are we kidding? The entire movie is just a lecture.
Yes, yes.
That's why I said it's not a movie. It's just this lecture, this Sunday school talk that materialism isn't so bad.
That was probably my favorite part. They justified materialism at the end.
Yes. That's what this whole movie is about.
Mm-hmm. But they specifically justified it at the end.
This goes really well with the dude that was mad about Starbucks not having snowflakes or snowmen on there.
Josh Feuerstein, yeah.
Because they're everything's a Christian symbol.
Mm-hmm. And there was some reference to elf worship in reference to Santa. Elf worship? I've dealt with serious born agains for a number of years. They're in my family. I've never heard anything about elf worship.
Yeah.
But
I had a good D&D character that was an elf once. I don't think I ever... He became a god in the end, I think.
Oh, okay. And then we're introduced to this... I'm going to say he's the comic relief of the film. This black preacher who... Actually, I don't even know if he was a preacher or if he just talked like one.
Oh, who knows?
It's very stereotypical, kind of racist... And he's just kind of peppered throughout the film.
He was the black friend.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they had another black friend at the end. So,
well, there's another guy who... I don't know if he was black or Middle Eastern. I couldn't really tell.
They had a woman like at the
dinner table. Oh, okay.
They invited their friends over and whatnot.
There's another Middle Eastern guy, I think he was, who... He's bald, has a beard and glasses. I'm convinced he was hired to be the resident hipster.
Is that what he was supposed to be?
I think so.
I really wasn't sure about any of that.
This is basically the worst cliches of, you know, mainstream family media all thrown together with the usual religious subtext made texts.
Yeah.
And then slathered in a bunch of lies.
And I mean, the line that really sums up the movie is the, "I hear ya." And then he pretty much goes to ignore what the guy said.
Mm-hmm. And Christian, the brother-in-law, makes a good point about, you know, how all the money that's spent at Christmas should be spent on, you know, digging wells and feeding kids and all of this.
Of course.
And he's immediately admonished for this by Cameron.
Right. He's admonished throughout at the end. Like, you know, he was a jerk. Like, wait, what? Because he actually wants to help poor people instead of have a stupid, you know...
The one sensible thing said in the movie, and he's admonished for it.
The whole thing. I mean, the tree is a pagan symbol. I think the only thing that he had right was the origins of Saint Nicholas.
Well, to a point. It got a little twisted.
Well... The moral of that story is frightening as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it,
yeah.
You know, somebody disagreed with him, so he came in and beat the shit out of him. Like, oh yes, turn the other cheek, right?
Yeah. The story was about Nicholas of Myra, the bishop of Myra, being at the Council of Nicaea. The oldest records of the attendance of the Council of Nicaea do not list him. So there's no evidence that he was there, and there's no evidence that this fight actually happened or that the other guy, I can't think of the character's name, was actually there, much like most of this film. But just want to take it in order. First, he claims that the manger was in a cave and made of stone. Now, he is correct. The manger is a feeding trough, which I did not know. But
that makes sense.
Why would they make it out of rock when there is wood available? And it's much easier to work with.
Right. Would they have gone through the trouble of carving something for just a trough to feed the animals?
And I think it's in the book that they ended up at a stable. I mean, it's been a while since I've had anything to do with the book, but I'm pretty sure I remember that.
I've been waiting for the movie, really.
Also, the tree story. That was just...
That's the most batshit crazy thing in this whole film, I think.
Legendarily insane. Okay, so here in a nutshell, Christmas trees represent the cross because Adam took the fruit from the tree and Jesus had to go back on the tree to take its place, to make up for the fruit that had been pulled from the tree, and that's why he went on the cross.
And just that whole attitude of, oh, you know, celebrating the winter solstice. You know, God made the solstice, so it's ours to celebrate. It's like, well, wait a minute. They were celebrating the winter solstice before Jesus was born.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is true, then why wouldn't Jesus have really been born in December?
Yeah. By all accounts, he was born in like April to June, somewhere in that area.
And of course, the whole debate about whether they were around in the census, you know.
There's the whole debate about whether Jesus actually existed.
Of course, there's that too. But I figured we'll go with the assumption that he did for the sake of this movie,
right?
An argument because a lot of his teachings are directly against this movie.
Counter to things that Cameron suggests.
Yes!
Just in reference to the specific claims about the pagan stuff in the film, there's a video on YouTube that I found called... Well, I didn't find it. I'm a fan of the guy who made it. Christmas Behind the Curtain, made by Seth Andrews, who hosts a podcast called The Thinking Atheist. I will put it in the show notes for this episode and on our Facebook page. It discusses a lot of the pagan origins of the symbols of Christmas, and also it completely debunks the idea that the U.S. is a Christian nation. Very interesting video. But like I said, it'll be on the Facebook and Google Plus pages. Back to the movie. Why was Adam bald?
I wondered that too. No clothes, it no made, hair. Well,
the no clothes fits the book, but why would he be bald?
Because he must star in the... Fast and Furious movies, my son.
We won't talk about the Star Trek trailer.
I've seen it.
Oh, don't bother.
Okay.
Now, this whole idea of the fruit and Jesus and that whole thing.
I thought they were against gay people.
But if that was at all a thing outside of the writer's head, wouldn't it be a mainstream idea? You know, it kind of fits the belief system. I would think that would be fairly mainstream if it was, you know, outside of, I can't think of the director's name, but if it existed outside of his head.
It's not a bad way of looking at it, but you can't say it's a historical reason that's why it's been done this way.
If it was cited as anything other than a way to appropriate the greenery, I would have no issue. I wouldn't take issue with it any more than I take issue with any kind of supernatural belief.
I mean, doesn't Odin even predate Judaism?
Yes, by quite a bit.
yes.
And, well, it was Saturnalia, which was a pagan belief system from, I think, that area, part of the world. Saturn. That's where a lot of it comes from.
You had the south of Europe and the north of Europe and the two, you know.
Yeah.
had their own gangs going on.
There was a practice of bringing greenery indoors to protect it from the winter so it doesn't die. That became the tree and the wreaths and the garland and all of that.
It's necessary to have an uplifting sort of occasion for the time of winter solstice. Well,
it's just
a natural need.
Well, there's a holiday at the solstice. There's a holiday in spring for a harvest. Another one appropriated, you know.
Well, right.
These are normal things that humans would celebrate. You know, the return of the warmer weather, the bounty of the harvest. You know, we have food now.
But there's just about every culture that's in the winter area that needs it. Just,
right.
I mean, or else we'd just probably go nuts. Mm-hmm. We already do go nuts.
Well, yeah, of course.
I mean, we just need it, you know, to keep all of us from going nuts.
Yeah.
And to me, it has quite the opposite effect, I think.
Yeah. And there's a line where Christian says that the pagan cultures jacked the Christian symbols, effectively equating it to a carjacking of the holiday. Kind of the other way around.
Exactly. That is, this one's funny when they argue about political correctness. It's like, wait, you weren't here first.
Yeah.
You realize that, right?
Now, the one thing I do have to credit with them for, when they talk about Santa, they do mention the original actual Saint Nick, Nicholas of Myra, who was a bishop who made a practice of buying gifts for the children in his village.
Yeah.
But, of course, there were other sources of the Santa myth, mostly pagan deities who were believed to fly across the sky in winter.
Right, which is, of course, they combine the two is what they did.
Yeah, but they don't mention those at all. They just talk about Saint Nick. And they twist that story with the whole Nicaea myth. And it would have been, you know, very convenient if they took the facts that, you know, he bought presents for the kids in the village. That would have explained the gifts. They wouldn't have had to go to this weird materialistic Jesus thing.
Well, right. I mean, just... The Santa Claus is, it's funny, you know, he's such a commercial symbol with, you know, because Coca-Cola remade him. And remember last week's movie, they made a reference to that. But, I mean, it is very easy to see how he fits in with the Christian belief because it's very Christ-like to give.
But they decide to use some other nonsense to explain the gifts, which didn't make sense. Also not making much sense, or less than the rest of this movie, the reason for December 25th, because the world is dying. Which is kind of the reason we celebrate as a species at the solstice, but it's actually more hope for the return.
You know, that's you're at the bottom of the pit, you know?
Yeah,
you kind of, you've made it, you know, all the way to the end of the Long Jay's journey into night. And now you're ready to return to light.
Also, there's a fight scene in the Nicholas bit that was entirely out of frame. Like, all of the hits were out of frame, but you see the guy kind of reacting to them. It was rather comical.
I think the only time I laughed at this was when he used the you line, "You drank the Kool-Aid."
Yeah.
To defend his... pretty much his cult. You're not in this cult?
Yeah.
You drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wait a minute. Do you realize where that line comes from, dude?
Yeah,
no, you don't.
Yeah. I also got a particular kick out of the line, "We need to infuse old symbols with new meaning." In other words, we need to lie.
Yeah.
And I loved the part. This almost bought it some brainage. He said, "If you were writing the story, what would you do with this scene," or something along those lines, "when the brother-in-law finally sees the light?" And I just couldn't help but think, yeah, if I were writing it, Richard Dawkins would show up, correct all of the lies, and then deconvert everyone at the party. And I have to admit, I've never done this for one of our movies before, but I had to skip over part of it, the dance sequence.
Oh, yeah, I did too. I couldn't. No.
Closest I've ever come to tapping out of a movie.
There really was no need to watch all of that dance number anyway. No. It was just...
I was watching it in QuickTime, and so I was able to see the screen as I was fast-forwarding. It was just dancing. There was no dialogue.
That's my final lesson for the movie, for Kirk Cameron. If you only have 53 minutes of movie, you can't just add a 26-minute musical dance number to make it a feature length. That's cheating.
It wasn't just that till the end of the movie. There was the horrible dinner scene where they, you know, justify the materialism and get very tribal.
That's true. That's
and, true. Okay, so one of the comedic sections with the black preacher, he's talking to Christian about, you know, funny shirt day or something, crazy shirt day that was canceled at their work and that he was very unhappy about. And, you know, being, you know, sent to a different floor and all of these irrelevant work concerns just to make conversation. And I didn't catch this till the outtake. There was a line about straight power.
What?
I don't know if it was, you know, straight up power, you know, or if it went heterosexual power. I have no idea what the line meant. I don't know.
I just caught the phrase too and didn't catch any of that.
I just caught the phrase straight power and it concerned me. So. Now, I do have a bit of trivia. Not much for this one, thankfully, really? But the film received a 0 rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and it was nominated in 6 categories for the 35th Golden Raspberry Awards. It won for Worst Picture, Worst Actor, Cameron, Worst Screenplay, Darren Doan, that's the director, and Cheston Harvey. And it also won for Worst Screen Combo for Kirk Cameron and His Ego.
But he didn't write or direct this, so he really doesn't get as much blame.
No.
As Darren.
I suspect he put some money behind it, though.
Probably. Yeah.
It was produced by, which is effectively sponsorship, by Liberty University. Run by, I think, is it one of the Grahams?
I forget.
Some big preacher.
Falwell.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, it's some big preacher runs that. Yeah, televangelist nonsense. So, yeah, they have a vested interest. I think Cameron probably put some money behind it and influenced it to say exactly what, you know, his ministry preaches. I'm done with my notes.
Yeah, Jesus would want you to have the luxury car.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, you may feel uncomfortable doing this, and there may be things written in this Bible that contradict you doing it. But, you know, we really want you to do it, and we wouldn't want you to lose you as a follower, so you go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm done with my notes.
On to sequels and remakes. No, please, no. Although the idea of a sequel does kind of make me feel like that meme with Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka. Yeah.
Tell me more about your bullshit beliefs.
Yeah, honestly, I still think my first thought for a title for this movie was the best.
Yeah, go ahead. I just didn't want it in the title because I didn't want to get shit from my conservative relatives, but yeah, go ahead with it.
But think of how much attention it would have grabbed us.
Yeah.
I said we should call this an ISIS recruitment video because they're such assholes. If you had no idea about anything else, you might think, well, maybe it's not such a bad idea to join them.
And the copy that I acquired, and yes, I'll admit acquiring a copy of this one, was subtitled in Arabic.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah.
So right, kind of right. Leading towards your idea. On to brains.
On to brains.
Okay, so up until this point, as I've said on many occasions, Showgirls is the only movie I've vowed to never watch again. There is now a second movie on that list. I'm going 0.
Wow. Oh. At no point in this rambling, incoherent response, did he even come close to anything that could be considered a rational thought? Everyone in this room is now dumber for having watched it. I award you no brains, and may have God have mercy on your soul.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, you're going 0 as well?
No, I award you no brains.
Okay, just making sure. And what have we learned?
Stories are tricky things for Kirk Cameron.
And I learned that it's actually possible for a movie to be worse than Showgirls.
Like I said, this was not a movie.
I would honestly pay to see Showgirls before I'd watch this again for free.
I would, you know what? Let's flip the casts. Let's have Showgirls cast perform this movie.
Oh, yes.
And Kirk Cameron and his sister can do Showgirls.
No, please, no.
No?
Which sister? Because the other one could be interesting.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, not the one that was in this.
You sure? That's what I was thinking, actually.
All right, so until next year.
Oh, wow, we made it through a year.
When we'll be reviewing the Godzilogy, starting with Roland Emmerich's Godzilla from 98. Will be a fucking masterpiece after this. I wish we could review it next week for the palate cleanser.
No, I need some time off.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to enjoy my vacation, but I mean, it would be a very good palate cleanser if we reviewed it next week.
I have some Christmas materialism to participate in, actually, and I'm way behind on, as always.
Mm-hmm. Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoy the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. We've squeezed a few more in. I think we actually might be through March at this point.
Yeah, we have a lot of next year planned already, yeah. So
of course,
we'll squeeze more in here and there.
Hmm. Of course, the request form, if you've got a movie you'd like to hear, please leave it on the request form. We'll get to it. And the recommendations list. Yeah, right.
If we did an opposite, we always talked about doing, like, the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
Is there another movie that has gotten a double no-brain?
Well, there's Showgirls and Crossroads.
Okay.
So, yeah, we've done it three times. That I know of. There may be another one I'm not thinking of, but those are the two I know of.
But there's usually something where we, like, one of us is like, give it half a brain or something, or go one brain.
After I watched the movie, I was putting together the blog post because I'm going to regret saying this, but I'm planning to edit tonight and just get it out of the way so I can start vacation as soon as possible. And so I was putting together the blog post, and I didn't want to assume your rating because I figured this could be one of those cases where it was just the greatest unintentional comedy you've ever seen and you can end up giving it a 5.
But it didn't have it. You know, it's not like The Room where it was just like this bombastic insanity. It was just a dude preaching.
Yeah.
There was nothing there.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you can email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01, or for the alphanumerically challenged.
I can't. I don't even have it in me.
You can just watch this movie.
Yeah.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee, and until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Sometimes you have to be brought low.
Titles, I've got some strong ones here.
The titles just kept coming.
I've only got a few, but they're strong. I actually thought of all of them before watching the movie.
Oh, yeah?
The first one I've had for a while, and a crocoduck in a pear tree. The War on Saturnalia.
That's good. That is good.
Or my favorite, probably. I don't know. It's between that one and this one. Use Your Delusion.
Ooh, that's good, too.
Sums up the movie rather nicely.
I've got... Of course, the only one that I came with before the movie, ISIS recruiting video.
Yeah, no.
Nobody puts Jesus in a corner.
I thought about that one, actually.
The OG zombie story.
Ooh.
An Idiocracy Christmas.
Okay.
Here's some real good ones, though. Straw Manta Claus.
Ooh.
Or The Gospel According to Billy Madison.